We're back. It's Pipe and Slip Mats. You've got me, Scott. You've got James. You've got Tunde in the room. We said we'd be back within the month. We may have slipped a little bit on that.
When did we say that?
We said that over a year ago. But we're back with the podcast for aging ravers. For those with one foot in the grave, this is Pipe and Slip Mats, Volume 3.
Bloody hell. The brilliant thing of Pipe and Slip Mats, of course, is music like that. The thing I'm thinking of, well, A, it's called Bomb Scare. You don't get much music these days with bomb in the title and actual sound effects of exploding bombs.
No, you don't get enough dynamite in dance music these days. No. I absolutely agree.
Really overlooked.
It is. And you know, you think to yourself, I've gone out for a nice night, I'm going to relax, you know, maybe I'll hear some stuff that will uplift me, but actually you walk in with the
bang!
Troubles of the world on your shoulders and you're just getting slammed with explosions.
Yeah, people are so sort of politically correct these days, aren't they? It's kind of, you know, bureaucracy and all of that.
Yeah. Stop dropping bombs in my tunes, mate.
But there's a serious lack of it. How are we starting the show, Scott?
Well, I think we're starting by congratulating Tunde, aren't we? So Tunde has... He signed a record deal with Universal.
Is that because of us?
Yeah, I mean, he's DJing all over the place, and all of this happened post Pipe and Slip.
Oh, right.
Well, I just correct you, it was a publishing deal.
Okay, whatever.
All right, I mean,
pedantic.
Still sounds good.
But you do the maths, listeners. One podcast with us, massive multi-million pound publishing deal.
Yeah.
give or take a few decimal points.
Yeah.
How's the publishing deal going? Well, who's it with? Universal? Do we need to give them a lot of love and props
Big
and shout
Bruce,
out?
Universal.
Big up Universal. They'll be delighted, I'm sure. The Pipe and Slip Mats are referencing the conglomerate that is Universal.
Avid listeners, actually. They listen like...
Absolutely.
Funnily enough, that's what, when I signed, that's what I said.
Yeah. Did they actually say, look, there's actually just one condition, is we need the shout-outs and respect from Pipe and Slip Mats.
We'll actually say we came across you. Pipe and Slippers podcast. And then we chat out your music.
Yeah.
I mean, it won't be long before Tunde is asking me to write his biography. I can see it now. You know, once he, you know, he's DJing at Fabric, he's DJing all over the place.
Funny you should say that. Is Katie, my wife, has just finished a biography of Lily Allen, and Tunde's in it.
Oh, of course.
Genuinely.
Yeah, there you go.
So you're kind of being facetious, but...
Yeah. For the listeners who don't know, Tunde produced Lily Allen's album.
Yeah, this is the measure of the man that we're in. We're basic nobodies in the music scene, and Tunde's an actually legitimate person.
I'm actually writing a biography. Well, just memoirs. Just about...
What do you mean you're writing a biography?
Just
the top line stuff.
Just the top line stuff. Yeah. My little joke, like anecdotes and stuff.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So basically, what you're saying is you're keeping the good stuff for that, not for Pipe and Slip Mats.
That reminds me when I was in New York with Such a Body and Such a Body.
Yeah.
Eating truffles.
To be fair, I know you're joking, but the first time I met you, we talked about you producing Tom Jones. So this is actually, to be fair, like, in your repertoire, you could actually write a biography.
Are you saying it's not unusual?
Oh, my God.
Stop
it. Please, God. This definitely wasn't in the script. Not that there's a script.
So, I mean, just talking about biographies, though, one thing I have noticed is that there are a lot of old rave DJs releasing autobiographies.
Like
Jumping
who?
Jack Frost has
really?
One.
Really?
Billy Bunter, do you remember him?
Wasn't he a character in The Dandy?
Yeah, he was that. But also he thought it'd be a DJ thought it'd be a great name. He was a happy hardcore kind of dude.
Okay.
And I just wonder whether this is a sign of things to come. Well, I wonder two things. A, who's buying them? And B,
really though,
is the world ready for example, Slip Mats tales of Harry got lost in the, you know, the messy kind of roundabout network around Milton Keynes trying to get to the sanctuary? I just don't know how much interesting stuff is in these biographies.
Two things.
Okay.
Apparently... Yeah. There's a lot of times DJs got lost in the roundabout in Ibiza. Yeah, I've heard about five or six DJs that's going to be in the
But it doesn't warrant a book.
Well, it does.
We've all got lost on the fucking ring road. Sorry to
swear. But I quite like it. Like, we've got... there's a guy called Clayton who used to... He set up Renegade Hardware and Trouble and Vinyl and Renegade Records.
I love that.
And he was probably the first guy we signed to in terms of Future Cut and putting our music out there. So he's... big influence in our career, and he's just done a book, and he put the lights at the end, and I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to read about
because
it.
Of the motorway, the ring roads, the roundabouts that he
I mean, I think
on.
It'll probably be slightly different because it's probably London centric and sort of the
M25 will be a big feature, totally.
But yeah, just the idea of how you had to put on nights and what you had to go round to put those nights on, and
I
those,
actually think there's something in there.
Yeah, those. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't probably. It wasn't as sanitised as it is now.
My only query is, I just think we can guess the general kind of form and narrative that book will take. Big DJ smashes it on a few nights, gets on it, has a wicked time, gets on it some more, doesn't go to bed, drives around a roundabout.
The end.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't think there's any jeopardy.
I'll be honest, mate, I'm not reading that. Yeah, I mean, it's funny, it reminds me, I don't know if I've ever told you this before, I used to ghostwrite Paul Oakenfold's column.
In what era?
In 98 to 2001, so he had a monthly column in Ministry magazine that I ghostwrote.
And
for the start, he is a lovely man, however, by that time in his career... By that time in his career, he was massively successful, but he was no longer doing the stuff that makes for interesting copy. He wasn't going out,
Scott,
smashing it up, staying up all night, throwing TVs out the window, sleeping with loads of teenage girls. Yeah. Not that that makes him interesting, but he wasn't being...
Did he care about the column you wrote?
He just wanted to talk about the sushi restaurants he was going to in LA. And
out of interest, and what was he into? A bit of Nobu?
And
you guys are so middle class. And he was talking, you know, he talked about the film score that he was working on, things like that. But when you're editing a magazine for, you know, 17-year-old Cana kids, they don't want to read about what sushi restaurant Paul Oakenfold likes in LA.
California roll types, you know.
Yeah. Like the... I mean, so but every month I had to eke out a 400-word column based on a 20-minute conversation with him.
So this is what I want to get to. So you did have the 20-minute conversation. Mm, yeah. So you're like, Paul, how are you?
Yeah.
Column's going
Give
well.
Me the goss.
And he'd be like, there's zero Nobu goss. Was rammed.
As per last week, goss equals zero.
So did you say, look, Oaks, here's the deal. I'm going to have to slightly fabricate and play with the truth. Be honest, Scott, did you lie? Did you tell lies?
No, I never fabricated the truth. I'd imagine he's a very litigious man. No, I never did that. what I did do was, I think I mostly just talked about the, because, I mean, to be fair to him, you know, he was playing in, and he still does, I'm sure, he was playing at some of the best clubs in the world, he was flying all over the place, so you could talk about the vibe of the clubs, but, you know, talking about that every single month without any kind of insight into anything interesting you might have done other than changing records.
I think that's more of a fault of the column.
Do you know what I mean? Are you putting this on me?
Well, were you the editor?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm suggesting that as editor, that column wasn't fit for purpose. What? Have you worked with Oakes? Is he?
No.
Surprising. Because the last I knew, he was kind of Vegas material, like incredible, genuine
that's
quality.
Absolutely,
like,
what he is. Yeah, he's on
world
that
renowned.
Ghetto level, Vegas show level. Yeah,
good
absolutely.
For him. Doesn't. Just so I'm clear, it doesn't require you writing a column anymore.
You know, it's funny, he hasn't been in touch for a while.
So strange.
We used to get the football together, we used to get Chelsea together.
What?
All sorts.
You know why? Hold on. Yeah. I'd go to the football
with Paul Oakenfold, yeah. Alan McGee would be sat behind us.
Oh, mate, people, this is the story.
People would be leaning over while he's trying to watch the game, handing him Paul Oakenfold mixed CDs for him to sign.
That's amazing. What was? Did you know McGee, by the way? Because I know that's not.
No, it was pre Oasis, so no, I wasn't really that. Wow. Paul pulling about.
He doesn't do the column anymore.
Because it was awful.
No, he's vegan, so there's nothing to. He doesn't know about sushi anymore.
Oh yeah. And to be fair, that was 90% of the column. You're right.
So his absolute anger with fish.
He's over now. Yeah.
He's actually lost Scott money.
Yeah. Damn you, Oakenfold.
I'd be honest, I wasn't expecting this as a start to the podcast. But what I like is 12 months after the last podcast, listeners, and there aren't many, but listeners are thinking, honestly, lads, are you talking about Paul Oakenfold?
Should we maybe play a tune at this point?
Yeah, please. What tune could be related to Oakenfold and his love of sushi?
So we're not going to talk about Oakenfold because he was a big Goa Trance man, and I don't think any of us love Goa Trance at all. So why don't we talked about Slipmat earlier. Let's have Way My Brain by SL2. But I think, Tunde, you found us an interesting mix.
What? Curveball?
Well, no, I quite like SL2's remix of Psychotropic.
Ah, okay.
Any reason? Is there any story, or should we just smash it?
Well, yes. There's several reasons.
Please,
Psychotropic came out in 1989, and the bass line was used that many times and sampled and repeated, probably most famously by Four Hero with Mr. Kurt Yosemite's Dead.
Oh, really?
But originally, it was Psychotropic who first used it.
This is why I love
it. I think before that, it was in a Chicago house tune, but I can't remember what that is. But putting that bass line with a breakbeat, Psychotropic did it first. And then 2-3 years later, SL2 remixed it and put in like some cool little samples, like the little scratch in there, and just turned it from a seminal breakbeat tune into a massive hardcore tune. And although Weighing Your Brain and DJs Take Control are great songs, I think what he did to that remix really showcases how a DJ producer can take a piece of music and take it to a new height.
Tundi, that is proper hype man MC.
I'm really excited about hearing this because I don't think I've heard it before.
Play the tune.
Okay.
my God, are you joking? That's brilliant.
That, honestly, I'm not messing around. That might be the best tune we've played.
Why did I not
in,
know
on Pipe and Slip Match, full stop.
What a record.
Do you know what? We've got to give a shout out to Lime as well.
Yeah, of course.
Who, I mean, how can you forget Lime? It's Holmes and Watson, isn't it? Yeah.
Most people say that. Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson, Slipmat Lime. It kind of is. It does work.
And dropping that little scratch with Quit Rubai is just genius.
It's a ridiculously good record. I couldn't be more hyped.
So I'm seeing a pattern emerging. Listeners, just so you know, we don't really plan the tunes we're going to play, but we've already played two breakbeat tunes, and I'm feeling a breakbeat vibe here.
There is. I mean, I think Scott's pointing out, planning is loose. And I know you're going to be massively surprised by that because of the frequency and regularity of the show. You assume we're super tight, everything's tightly scripted to win, you know, 4 or 5 seconds. You'll be surprised to learn it's not. It's a bit more loose than that. We're a bit more freeform. Really just let it happen, don't we, chaps?
I mean, isn't that the spirit of rave, though? That
great,
looseness.
Great retrofit.
No, but it is. The looseness is the spirit of rave. I mean, I was thinking the other day, before we did the show, I was thinking about sort of the kind of embarrassing moments that come from rave looseness. And I know we've all got stories about stuff that's happened at the rave or post-rave. And, I mean, for me... one that springs to mind is after a big New Year rave, I got on a train. It was in Brighton. I got on a train on Brighton Station to London at, I know, 6 a.m.,
you're
something
feeling
like that.
Pretty...
Feeling like, OK, I'm on the train. I'm getting home
Thank
now.
God.
Thank the Lord. I've left the rave. I'm on my own because I've got no mates. I'm on my own.
Why are you on your own?
I can't remember. But anyway, I get what happens is I nod off.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, I'm pulling into a station.
Yeah.
I open my eyes and think, I stepped through a whole journey.
Beautiful.
Perfect. I'm at my station. As I walk out onto the platform, I'm in Brighton. I've gone all the way to London and back again.
God.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine the despair? This is New Year's Day. Can you imagine?
Start the new year in the right way.
Imagine how low and stupid.
New year, new me. Fresh start.
But
get fit.
You know, there's loads of I mean, we've got a mutual friend.
Let's call him Tim.
Let's call him Tim. Yeah, good shout. Maybe you want to talk through this.
I don't know if there's much. I mean, you know, it's not as demoralising as your bleak story of starting all over again. But Tim, a year or two back, was in a club. He was in Fabric club. Tunde's played there many, many times. I think he'd had a couple of, you know, couple of drinks, had a heavy night. Met a guy who seemed utterly excitable and enthused at the time. And
a good guy.
Great guy. Mm. Tim decided to go, look, good news. I run a business just up the road. You seem like the man for me. Come in tomorrow. Let's make it 10 a.m. sharp. And we're going to talk about the job that you've got now.
Yeah,
and
it's Tim's a big job.
Tim's like,
did they discuss salary? Do you think they probably did?
I think they did touch upon like the brackets. I don't think you've like committed, but he's like, it's between you know 40 and 50, something like that.
And it's just a signature contract. Is
exactly.
All
well, he's the CEO, so it's like it's done.
It's a done deal, mate. You don't even need my signature.
Exactly. Yeah. And the guy, Tim, was, you know, the guy who spoke to him was like, oh, this is great news, you know.
He just so I'm clear, this is all happening at about 4 a.m. in Fabric.
Yeah, which I know is probably warning signs.
Mm. It's not your typical interview situation.
Next day, he turns up. Tim is a little bit late, to the tune of like an hour and a half later.
Mm.
The guy, this kid, is sat on the sofa of the reception, just like, has anyone seen such and such? And they're like, what, you mean the CEO?
Mm.
He's not in yet, you know. It's odd that you...
Where's my desk?
Quite assumptive. Anyway, slightly embarrassing moment transpired when the CEO, Tim, walked in and had to basically spell out that there's no job.
Well, I was off my nut. It was 4 a.m. in Fabric.
I don't know what I was saying.
I was just making a friend.
Did he buy him lunch at least?
No, I don't
just
think so.
Sent away. I think he had a meeting or something. Yeah.
If anything, he was an annoyance. So that's
bad thing.
But this is what happens, isn't it? Unfortunately,
you make friends.
Well, at the club, it feels like we're in nirvana. Yeah, we're in utopia. This is
you and I are like peas in a pod.
Yeah. This is beautiful. This is great.
Yeah, although I have to say, I've never offered someone a job in a nightclub. You know,
actually, that's how Future Court became Future Court.
Really?
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, it wasn't like I was off my nut, but we were in a club.
Absolutely.
I used to have like a little flying business, you know, where you hand out flyers from clubs. And obviously, I had a night, and Darren had a night, And we was in this club and we were chatting. And I was like, I tell you what, do us a favour. I've got to go off somewhere else. If you have my flyers out, you can come in the studio and have a mess about, because I had a studio. But you say that to a lot of people and then just ignore them.
Anyone who would listen.
Yeah. Anyone who would do me a favour. Totally. Basically, that was like the carrot. And so he did me a favour. He did the flyers. I was going to do some other flyering, but got a bit hungry, got a kebab and went home instead.
Oh, God.
And then I turned up about 3 o'clock on Monday to the studio, and he's waiting outside with a record bag. I've been waiting there for 4 hours.
You're joking.
Yeah. I was like, oh, what are you doing? He's like, do you remember you said we arranged? I was like, yeah, I didn't think you'd take me up.
I was just making conversation. Yeah.
20 years later.
I love the fact that, well, to be honest, and therefore the reason we're sat here now in a studio is as a consequence of that.
Yeah.
So it shows it can work. I think, amazingly, my first agency, I used to run an agency called Holler, a digital agency, and the first girl I ever employed, we were like six boys, da da da. I offered her a job in a club called Evergreen in Farringdon, which was this really.
Oh, yeah, you used to love that club.
Wicked. Like, it was like a tunnel, like almost underground. It's all been demolished now on the crossway and all that stuff. But yeah, it was a random introduction. It's like, yeah, you should definitely be a producer, project manager. She stayed and was absolutely amazing. I think the point here is these moments in clubs aren't necessarily the correct foundation for business.
No, I mean, you know, I'm no business guru.
No,
you know,
but
I'm not John Harvey Jones. what I do know is that the interview situation isn't best conducted with blistering techno playing in the background and strobes firing all around you.
I get what you're saying.
While some bloke gurns at you and says, I'm your man.
Which, that's not me, by the way. I was very copious mentors when I was...
No, I'm talking about the potential employee.
Absolutely.
Talking about raves, let's play what is utterly, utterly a rave anthem, a northern rave anthem for Tunde.
Yeah, for the resident northerner.
So what we've done there, a little bit different, is we've talked during the first track, which, by the way, is bloody brilliant, somehow got onto a tip about a second track and realised that's great and played that back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a Pipe and Slip Mats first, ladies and gentlemen. Back-to-back tracks never will happen. Normally it's just our nonsense in between.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you're kind of lucky that we didn't just continue to play each other hardcore tracks and there was no more speaking.
Well, when you say lucky...
Well, actually, yeah, you've missed out.
That's all they want. Just play us some good records. Stop with the faff in between. Tell me about either track, either of you, because that second track, where's that from? It's gold.
Well, let me start with the first track, which is a hardcore uproar, which for me, I remember at the time, it's like, you know, like the 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
Well, in Manchester, it's probably about 2 or 3.
Right.
So when we were kids, we knew someone who knew someone
yeah.
who was in hardcore uproar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's cool.
I think his brother used to like manage the local clothing shop where everyone used to get the stolen.
Was it like a claim to fame, though? Would people be like, I know someone?
Not really, because it's always been like that. I mean, when Gerald first got in the charts, he was still working at Wimpy's, do you know what I mean?
So is that right? Really? Yeah. A guy called Gerald?
Yeah.
Really?
So
really?
Yeah. So there's always been that thing of like, you've been able to see...
Out of interest, what was he doing at Wimpy's? Sticking the burgers on or like at the counter?
I'm not sure.
No. Maybe Gerald, is he alive?
I presume he's still alive.
Are you going to ask him
to email us and let us know which part of the sort of wimpy setup he was responsible for?
To be fair,
he's probably got stuff on.
I mean, a guy called Gerald is actually listening to the show, what I need more is for him to email beyond his wimpy setup.
Yeah. Come and join us.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we can talk wimpy. We can talk anything you want, though. We don't just have to focus on wimpy.
McDonald's.
Yeah.
Burger King.
Yeah, I mean, any
Wendy's.
Sort of, any fast food outlets you want to chat about, great.
Sorry to interrupt.
Let's make it happen.
And I think one of them passed away. One of them was a car accident.
Oh, God. I knew you were going to say that.
In Ibiza, which was sad.
You always have that potential with rave. This is why I started the conversation, is he still alive?
Yeah.
Car accidents in Ibiza are fairly common, but, we walk into Ibiza.
The great thing about music in that time is, 25 years later, we're talking about him.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is it 25 years?
Yep, must be. Yeah, must be. And then the second track was...
28 years?
What was the second track was Friends of Matthew.
So I didn't know the name, and as soon as you started playing, I was like, this is wicked.
Yeah. So they did The Calling, but that was... What did we listen to there?
Out there.
So they did The Calling and Out There. Both brilliant tunes.
How would you describe it? What actual music was that?
I'd call it house music myself.
Yeah, but you say everything's house music.
That's true.
I do. I've said that so many times. You know, it's house music.
You know, it's funny. Like, when I was a dance music journalist, I was all for getting really specific on pigeonholing. Yeah. And as I've got older, I just don't know how useful that is particularly.
Well, I think for a show that is predominantly about the cold genre of rave music and house music, I think maybe go a bit more explicit.
Well, I would say it's got more in common with Shop and Dance than it has with...
Okay. I'm going to put it out there.
House music.
Jungle, rave,
I'd say breakbeat.
Okay. I can live with that.
I don't want to fall out of it. Stop the podcast.
You could class it as breakbeat house.
Yeah, sure.
You could class it as a prequel to hardcore.
Fuming. Absolutely furious in the corner.
It's just good.
And do you know what? It was very good, and I'm pretty sure the listeners will appreciate the fact we've gone back-to-back for the first time ever.
So, what I want to talk about now, and it's the sort of, how do I crystallise it? It's the shoddiness, the lovely, beautiful shoddiness of old rave. So what do I mean by that? I mean that I remember going to a rave when I sort of leaned back on a wall once, and when I pulled myself away, they'd obviously just repainted it or something that day, but not with the sort of paint you're supposed to use in a high-temperature environment, because I was covered. My whole new outfit was covered in red paint. Or what I used to... really, love's probably the wrong word, but it always sort of tickled me, was when you'd hear some brilliant tunes being played, it would be peak time, and then the MC would cut in and the music would lower for a second for the MC to say, you know, somebody's parked their B-Reg Escort outside the front, can they move it, please? Bang! The music would come back.
What I love is the Flyers, if you recall, were about this kind of eternity, like it's an incredible woman, like looking up to the heavens. They were called things like Fantasia. Mm. Everything's about this, yeah. like impossible to reach utopia, this nirvana, this promised land. That was the name of another one, right? Promised land. And yet someone's like, can you move the Ford Fiesta from the corner of the car park? Or such.
That's put a bit of a dampener.
It's like
it?
I'm just about to find my nadir, my nirvana.
I'm
this
probably
is
the
it.
Happiest I've ever been.
Yeah. I'm about to basically complete my life, and it's...
Yeah.
Can the owner of the white van. And it's like, oh my God, guys, you're killing my vibe. Talk about Fun Sponge.
But I mean, there was, you know, there isn't that one of the brilliant things about Old Rave, though? It wasn't particularly professionally run, and it was really loose, and it always felt a bit. We talked about the edginess before, edginess and sloppiness, and, you know, it just felt like it had been kind of thrown together, and that was part of its brilliance,
yeah,
right?
It had. I mean, it was. Run by kids.
Do you know people who've run raves? Did you meet many?
Yeah.
I can't imagine it's like, right, here's the logistics. We've got the blueprint out back. We've been planning it for
some time. It was one of three people. Either people who had the balls to break into somewhere and do it. Someone who
into somewhere.
Someone who whose parents had a warehouse, so they did it. Or someone who had money who could hire it from their parents' friends who had a warehouse.
Yeah. It wasn't like really 3 years of Olympics level kind of organisation and logistics.
I don't know. I don't know if you've seen what's been going on over the past few years about this, the new illegal rave thing.
No, I don't know about this at all.
Yeah, there's like a thing again now where these kids are just going in and finding warehouses and going.
Are they
brilliant?
Oh, I like that. Yeah. I didn't know that. And what are they playing?
Hopefully not one of mine now.
What are they playing? What kind of music?
I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure.
What kids into? Right, kids, if any kid listens, what do you like?
Probably that'd be that neuro funk dubstep.
Yeah, totally.
Well, there's a lot of minimal, isn't there? I mean, the whole sort of minimally ketamine-y Ricardo Villalobos sort of vibe sounds like a metronome ticking type thing. There's that.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, but
just tick, top. Yeah.
But I suppose the thing is that's still almost like a kind of a mainstream now.
Is it?
Well, in the sense of. That's kind of a mainstream in the sense that people know about it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Middle-aged people know about it.
Mm. Got you. Like Scott, for example.
Yeah.
Where, so what you're saying is if I know about it, then it's probably not what they're doing.
Well, yeah. Point is, we're just talking about these kids who are doing illegal raves and no one knows what music they're playing.
I like that.
So,
I'll be honest with you.
Which is the same as when we
were
kids.
I like the fact that you couldn't answer that question, so I don't really know.
Yeah.
The fact that I assume, therefore, that means it's good. The fact that you're not massively in touch with it, you're 40-odd, is a good thing.
38, 21, out there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is interesting because, you know, when you are an elderly raver, invariably what happens is you don't go to nightclubs that often. Although, interestingly, we are going to Ministry of Sound tonight, but aside...
But I'm frightened. You tell me it's trance.
Yeah, don't be frightened.
I am
just
very
just
frightened.
Embrace it. But what I want to sort of explore is we all have dinner parties. We invite people round, and often the people we invite round probably like similar music to us, but at no point during a dinner party do I think I'm going to put on that old Slipmat live at Milton Keynes.
I bet
was this during or after the dinner party?
That's a good question, actually.
You've had some apple crumble and custard.
So we've finished the apple crumble and custard.
You're on a cappuccino.
And are you then thinking hardcore half hour?
Stick on DJ hype now.
Yeah, yeah. I still don't think I would.
We used to have a hardcore half hour.
We did, that's
true. But there was no dinner party.
No, that was more sort of 3 or 4 in the morning.
It was straight hardcore for 7 or 8 hours.
How would we really middle class now?
Go on.
I went to the White City House New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm. This is going back to the Oakenfold chat, but go on.
And it was people just doing nothing with DJ.
Oh, that looks amazing.
So you walked in and had this amazing spread of food, right? The four different types of fried chicken. That's how much they went in. four different types of fried chicken.
Out of interest, what are the four different types of fried
chicken? Like a honey glazed one, okay, like a jerky one, plain one.
What did you go for? What were you into?
I just had like a couple of wings, I think.
Yeah, what, plain or?
No, just look jerky, but I didn't want to, I was wearing something nice, I didn't want to sort of get all over.
Yeah, you don't want it all over your face.
And I was talking to people as well, and they were eating.
Jerky chicken all over your face.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, I'm trying to talk and just having a little nibble at the time.
Was it nice though, by the way?
It was okay. Drinks were even nicer.
Yeah.
But and then 12 o'clock came and I started off with Original Nutter. So you had all these sort of middle class, middle aged people raving to going Shy FX and Original Nutter.
Okay. So that kind of answers my question.
I like that.
Yeah. So post dinner party.
But is it like the reveal? Is it like everyone keeps it quiet and then you hear the first bars of Original Nut and everyone goes bananas? Is it like being an away fan in an end? Like, I was the other night at a football and then no one declared they were a United fan and then they scored and we all went bananas. It's like, oh right, everyone's here. Is it like, are we all just secretly carrying the fact that we're all ravers?
I just think we're digging a bit deeper. I think like everyone over, well, anyone over 25 will shack out to a Garage tune, like to someone from 20, like, do you really like it? An 18-year-old, 19-year-old song.
Totally.
And those who are a little bit older, a little bit deeper, if you go back another 7 years, will know those songs.
I love the idea of everyone suddenly going bananas in somewhere like White City House, having eaten a load of jerk chicken. Was it a good night? Because I bet that was a great night. I actually saw a video on your Insta stories, I think, and I remember texting you or whatever on New Year's Day, and I was like, mate, where were you? And I thought you were going to say, like, some dark Dalston fucking underpass, like some proper kind of rave joint, and you were like, I was in White City Soho House, mate. And I was like, oh, right, it didn't look like that. It didn't look quite the grime fest that it appeared.
I mean, that's it. Posh is the new grime. Or grime is the new
posh. There you go, you heard it here first.
Posh is the new grime.
So, talking of dinner party tunes, shall we get on a tune? I'm not sure. This one would probably definitely come after the apple crumble. If we're going to continue the breakbeat theme that seems to be emerging here, I'm going to suggest M17 Rocking Down the House.
Play it!
Yeah.
That's good, wasn't it? Scott, tell me about it. That's a fantastic track. What's the deal?
You know what? I don't have many gaps in my rave knowledge, but I know absolutely nothing.
It's all right. We've got Tundi here. Tundi, what's the deal?
I'm just 1 minute. Let me Google it.
Lads.
This is what people tune in for, right? Guys Googling.
Between you both, you are the editor of Ministry. You're a world-renowned music producer. I'm the stooge. Listen, I'm the guy who knows nothing.
You know,
you
sometimes,
two are meant to give the expertise.
Sometimes you've just got to listen to a good record and go, that's a good tune. You don't need to treat it as some sort of academic exercise.
I'm not, and I don't want you to get defensive.
The thing is, I love that record, but I can't, you know, usually you listen to a record, it takes you to a time and a place. And
none of that. Yeah.
I can't remember.
Blank canvas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, who's the artist? Who's the...
MI7.
MI7. Mm. If... on the off chance you're listening, and
what are the chances?
So slim, but maybe Oakenfold would have passed them the recording, and
he's too busy on the sushi, man.
If Oakenfold could get through his California rolls in time to speak to MI7 and say, I know this is a long shot, but if you listen to this show, they reference you and they've got no idea who you are, but they like you, yeah. And they'll be like, why are you troubling with me with this?
Yeah, and how did you get my number?
And also, yeah, what? Just why?
But what it did remind me of, and continuing our breakbeat theme, it is very, very similar to another brilliant tune by called The Cutter by Blur.
Now that's a tune.
Yeah.
Now I know that.
Yeah. Let's listen to it.
Let's hear that.
I remember, it's a bit hazy. It was a long time ago, but I'm sure it was like a bootleg mix where they started off with the saxophone, went to the B line, then broke down and went into like the Moby Gold beat.
I remember not because audibly, but because I recall. So they'll like this. In fact, I'm going to send them the link so they'll like this. A guy called Robert Allen, who I went to school with when we were like 13, 14, 15, whatever it was. I remember him having a sleepover with my friend Simon Hankin, who will also remember this. He brought this 12-inch round. I remember it's got a guy with a sax as half the front cover of the 12-inch. It's like a black and white image of the guy with the sax and the other half's white, and it's like blow the cut. And it was a wicked, wicked record in his kind of 10 records that he brought round as absolute banging rave tunes from the time.
Right. That's just reminding me. I'm not sure. Maybe I've made this up. Mm. So it's either true or I've
told them. Doesn't matter. We can make stuff
so
up.
So the original white label had all the samples in there.
Yeah.
And then it was a bit like, you know, Blame Your Music when he sampled Seal.
He couldn't clear it.
And he couldn't clear it. So, really? I think the original, the release version is different.
This is like, this is like rave archaeology.
Well, it's the reason that one of my top 10 dance tracks of all time, which is that Basement Jack's track.
My Name Is Star.
My Name Is Star. Oh, incredible. Couldn't ever get a full release, well, any sort of release.
You need to give some context.
It had an Eminem sample in it, and it had a Jam sample in it, and it's a bloody
I don't know if we've
track.
Talked about this on the show before. I feel bad if we have. If we actually have a listener who will ever listen to the first show sort of 17 years ago.
I don't think we have talked about it.
My Name Is Star is this most wicked record that Scott once introduced me in the era where he used to just come around my house or flat, wherever it was, and play wicked records. This was given to you by Basement Jacks, by Felix from Jacks, when you were ministry editor.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a I nearly said rip-off. It's absolutely not. It's a wicked mashup of the Jam start. Dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, you don't dun, need to do the tune.
Okay. An Eminem, My Name Is.
Yeah.
Combination, and as you've just pointed out, clearly you can't get clearance from, frankly, any of the above. But it's a banger. And let's segue. We were in Space in Ibiza on the last year, penultimate year of, I think, Space being in Ibiza. Basement Jacks were playing. We went into the DJ booth. We were lucky enough to know some people. And I remember going up, and you, I think, were in the toilet. And I remember saying, I don't suppose you got that record. It was short shrift, frankly, because he just thought, who's the albino guy speaking at me?
This is Felix from Basement Jacks.
10 minutes later, yeah. He put the record on, looked at us and said, it's that record, and he played to the whole of Space.
I've never run more quickly out of a toilet in my life when I heard it.
Easily my favourite clubbing memory ever.
So just to be clear, we are standing next to Felix from Basement Jacks, facing 2,000 people going nuts to the tune that we selected. Should we play it?
It's kind of.
We've talked about it a lot. I know it's not old rave era, but it is an absolute
we can find it.
Banger
we can
of a
find
tune.
It. Let's play it.
Let's play it.
Mom does more dope than I do. What? that's more dope than I do. More dope than I do.
Jam sample, you've got the Eminem sample. I get why it's harsh. Tundi, whilst we were listening to that track and I was boring you about how much it meant to me, we used to play it in our flat in parties, we used to listen to it in Space in Ibiza, which was the story. But that's Taxman by the Beatles.
Yes. I mean, going back to the way, when I listened to that song, it just, I could imagine them in the studio with a smile on their face.
Which
is
amazing.
The bass line, yeah, is Taxman, right?
It's it.
That, that break, the breakdown was done. You could see it was pure joy doing that, the way they did it. It was,
so here's the thing.
But the sample, the original Jam song is ripping off the Taxman.
So here's the thing for me. Yeah. And I'm no musician. I don't work in the industry. I love the fact that a sample can make a young kid, a 17-year-old kid, I always remember Noel Gallagher actually said this about Don't Look Back in Anger. And he said, yeah, I've ripped off Imagine for the opening bars. And if a kid now goes and plays Double Fantasy by John Lennon for the very first time, that's wicked. And I thought, I really like that. Like, you leverage the sample to go and find something and explore something wicked in music that you're an artist you didn't know. I'll tell you what I've got an issue with.
Go on.
Rehashing wicked tunes in a way, frankly, not suited to the genre to appease a more modern, nonsensical middle class who think they're still a part of something but aren't. Example, the whole, like, classical version of rave music that's gone about. Pete Tong doing it. Nothing against Pete Tong. Hi, Pete. I hope you listen to the show. Hmm. But going out and playing, like, Hampstead House or wherever it is.
Well, Kenwood, they're selling out Albert
they're
Hall.
They're selling out. Playing Massive Attack riffs with cellos.
But who are these people that want to hear it? I genuinely don't get it.
I don't mind it.
That's
I honestly
me.
Don't mind it. If, don't, because A, don't, well, two things. A, it's just, as people get older, people want to listen to the way they want to listen to music, the same as what we're doing this podcast, rather than, if we were 17 years of age, we wouldn't be doing a podcast, we'd be out in clubs raving. So if someone wants to have Merlot wine and sit at Hampstead listening to rave music,
why
from
not
their
just listen
days,
to more down tempo, good dance music rather than some cobbled together pseudo classical, like those Hooked on Classics albums they used to sell in the 80s.
It's the rehash.
It's exactly that. It's like classical rock, the people that used to do when we were kids. You remember when it was like, this album is not for sale in the shops?
Yeah.
You can only get it
again,
on
because it's awful.
But they sold millions because our parents used to buy them and our parents' friends used to buy them. So,
are you saying we've all turned into our parents?
Yes.
Oh, my God, that's really
it's exactly that.
There is
my, well, it's funny you say that. Actually, on that note, my dad, bless him, about a year ago or so, sent me an email going, because he knows, you know, I work for Ministry and the rest of it. He goes, Scott, I see that Ministry of Sound are doing a classical concert at Harewood House in Leeds. Why don't you and Cole come up and go to this? I know you like clubbing, and then, you know, you can. My dad lives in Leeds.
It's a really sweet thought.
It's a really, really sweet thought for my dad. But my two thoughts were thus. One, that music sounds like the devil's work.
Yep.
Two, when your dad is encouraging you to go to a particular sort of nightlife, that's a sign you probably shouldn't go.
Even beyond the signs of maybe that's not for me, I think you've got to take it for what it is. Some of these tunes, they've got, like, K-Class records. They've got unbelievable Massive Attack records. They've got, like, wicked tunes from the last 25 years. It's not from
the seabed of 70 years ago. It's relatively recent. We all recall it. It's the fact that it's playing on the... I think my issue is it's given such legitimacy and credence and, like, credit. It's like, oh, that's absolutely wicked. We're rehashing the records that, frankly, you still listen to on a Spotify shuffle playlist. We're smacking them up with cellos and violins, and you're going to get the rosé out and really enjoy it.
So, is it the juxtaposition of genre that's a problem? Because none of us mind a remix. We all like a remix if it's done well.
That's
but
you
it's
just
the fact that
one.
It's just so diametrically opposed to
other than Tindy's a massive fan.
Yeah,
well, no, you say that, but say for instance, I was trying to think, like, is it Lola's Theme?
Yeah.
So the original song samples an old disco track.
Yeah.
I don't know what the guy's called.
Yeah,
now.
But disco's pretty close to dance music.
But the thing is that song was restricted. What they could only do what the sample did. So if they wanted to change the fifth bar from a major to a minor, from a major to a minor, they couldn't do that. It was in a sample. It was just a two-track of all the strings. So to then be able to reinterpret that and embellish that with an orchestra and go, this is where we started from the sample, but for the middle eight, I'm going to go somewhere else. And having the budget to do that.
I love the fact that you're the only musician in the room.
Yeah.
I love the fact that as the only musician, you're actually the one defending it. And I'm being genuine, as in the fact that you're giving it the credit and going, well, look, maybe the middle eight, maybe they're going to take it in a different direction. Like, you're giving it the air to breathe. Yeah, I don't see that. I don't think, oh, wicked, you're doing something so different, a novel. I guarantee not a single person queuing up at Kenwood House or Marble Hill Park is going, I hope they take this in a different direction tonight. All they're wanting is a vague recollection of something they once were in a classical style, so it doesn't jar with their rosé.
Yes, maybe. But I've been having conversations about other, like, similar dance genres and putting a classical slant on it. And those are the conversations you're having with the DJs, with the A&Rs. It's like, how do you take this song? How do you take this arrangement from a club, which originally had pizzicato strings from a synthesizer or whatever, and turn it into an arrangement, turn it into... not even a classical arrangement,
that,
just
that
a
get.
More musical
that,
arrangement.
That I understand. You're
still retaining the bits which everyone knows
and
loves.
If you look at Sasha, I know I'm talking about him a lot, but when he does his tour at the Barbican and places like that, he does his Refractor tour where he reinterprets his, you know, his big, big tracks. But they're not in a... they're still very much in the electronic genre. They're just a bit more sort of considered and downbeat and more deeper, I guess. But what he's not doing is trying to make himself sound like Brahms.
Yeah. I think it's... maybe I've got such an, like, annoyance by the sheer... if I'm honest, success and scale of it. I think if it was done almost on the side... and there are people reinterpreting music in a classical way that was born from the rave era, I'll probably find that quite sweet.
Well, but not shoving it in your face.
No, but I'll probably find that quite a sweet, like, subplot to, oh, my God, rave that was such a DIY or dance or the way... we all know the way it appeared. We've covered it a lot. Someone reinterpreting that through classical or classic music or using orchestras and the way that's come about. It's like, OK, that's sort of interesting. Probably my annoyance is that it's so big, it's so mainstream, it's selling an absolute mint on CDs or whatever the current music format is. It's played on radio. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, from a money point of view,
it's a money
I'd
spinner.
Love to take one of mine and do it.
Yeah,
I mean, from PRS point
I think
of view,
the point is, let's do
life
it.
Into something.
Should we?
I mean, can you imagine? Like, you've done a tune 20 years ago, 25 years ago,
and you
ago,
can do it again.
And then then you just get a check.
I think the point is,
Pete Tong's redone it and then play it
for the listeners.
Half a million people. In
we're
the past
about
year.
To launch the Pipe and Slipmats classical rave CD, double CD. Sorry,
yeah, can't buy it in the shops.
No.
How can they buy it?
If you send the postal order.
So what's interesting about this is that we're coming towards the close of the show and we've got a bit of a debate on the which track we're going to play you. Now, one of the artists is The Prodigy. What's interesting for me about The Prodigy is that they haven't reinvented themselves. You hear their latest stuff, whether you like it or not, it still sounds very much like it could have been made at the beginning of The Prodigy's musical journey. And I kind of admire them for that because they are such a force. So, you know, okay, it's, a lot of it does sound the same, but it's done very, very well. So it feels like 1991 rave, but done really, really well with all the technology that they have at their disposal. And there's a group that haven't particularly evolved their sound, but I think for me, it works for them.
I agree. I love the Prodigy. I think he's a genius. I think.
Do you know Liam?
No, but I think right from the start, his productions always stood out. From which was it? Was it Everybody in the Place EP or Where Evil Lurks?
Before that, it was Where Evil Lurks.
That's it.
I bought it from a place called Plastic Surgery Records in Maidstone, Kent.
That one with those four songs on it.
Yeah.
Even then, like the musicality, the engineering he did, the way how tight it was.
He was a genius.
In terms of like getting the samples and getting the breaks together.
But he did that drop, I think, better than anybody. Yeah. That drop, that build, and then that absolute cutaway cliff face drop.
Yeah, and actually to ride Charlie, because Charlie was pretty cheesy. I don't think anyone really... I didn't like Charlie. The other side,
I loved it.
Your lover loved, but Charlie, no. But it catapulted him into the pop sphere, and to actually ride it and still put out quality music without... and still sort of appease to both sides.
Yeah, yeah.
To the underground side. No one ever called him for that because the underground was still getting...
And to the rock.
Decent records for him.
They played Download Festival.
But, but the pop side, they were doing something which...
But to their credit, that was an evolution of a band that I never ended up appreciating later on because I went off it. But the Prodigy Experience record was flipping fantastic, and records like Weather Experience amongst the Madness was so cool and like new then. And do you remember then Jilted Generation was like Time in the Criminal Justice Bill. It was so on that note, like the inside of the cover. I was so gutted by Fat of the Land coming out.
I interviewed Keith.
You didn't like Fat of the Land?
I was gutted. Really? I was such a fan.
Is Fat of the Land
the third one with the crab on it?
Fat of the Land was a great
one. The one who's got the poison.
Poison and New Ryan.
You didn't
and
like that?
I love bits, Smack My Bitch Up and stuff, but other bits like Diesel Power and stuff I thought was absolutely nowhere near where the Prodigy was.
What I thought was really interesting is how he realised that for them to succeed, even though he was a Prodigy, he had to take a back seat and let the performers become the Prodigy.
I like that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is a lot of people with egos would be like, no, it's about me. I'm the producer, it's about me.
I like that.
I like how he took the back seat and made
the performance
the performance, like made the dance.
He made that tabloid, he made it mainstream. Everyone knew Keith Flint, no one knew Liam Howlett.
Yeah.
In the mainstream, I mean.
Yeah, of course. And Keith was he started off as a dancer, didn't he?
He was 100% a dancer.
So I think it was smart with all of them just like, this is how we're gonna do it, this is how we're gonna become the biggest band in the world.
Let's play a wicked Prodigy record.
Well, is that the winner then?
Yeah, we talked about, you know, it being between one track or another, but it sounds to me, given we've just been eulogising Prodigy for 5 minutes,
let's not play it.
Can I throw a curveball in just for the listeners?
Go on.
Have you heard of a band called Prosper?
Prospero?
Prosper.
No.
So these kids are, I don't know where they're from, I think they're from the north. The closest thing to the... They actually sound a bit like the Prodigy, but they're like
exciting.
18 years of age.
Are we actually giving insight to
this? Are they from back in the day, or these are...
No, they're brand new.
All right.
Brand new.
Tindy,
hang on a minute. Are they one of your artists?
They're not one of my artists.
Hang on
Tindy,
a minute.
Tindy, have you produced their records?
Just about to get...
Are you going to play a jingle now?
No, they've either just signed or just about to sign.
Wouldn't it be good if Future Cut produced them, for example?
Well, they won't work with us.
Really?
Yeah, they said no, thank you.
Did they really?
Yeah.
I love the fact that you're actually genuinely bigging up a new talent.
They said no, thank you. We're good enough. We don't need you, Grandad.
Do we need to? We need to play that now, right? Let's play We've banged on about the Prodigy. I couldn't have given them more of a build up. Let's play the Prodigy at their best, and then maybe play this.
Prosper.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Time is. You know what time it is.
kids are great, but Prodigy, I mean, to have a career like them, was it 28, 29 years now?
Well, surely it's basically the same as our experience, no? Yeah,
and did they not have a number, I think they had a number one record, another number one album this year.
What? Did they?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Are those new kids that you just played, I'm liking the track.
Yeah, it's got thoroughly enjoyed that.
Reminded me a little bit of the Calvin Harris like undertone of that vocal underneath.
Yeah, I could hear that. Yeah, possibly, I could hear that.
I suppose it's still bringing in everything I've listened to, grown up with in there. But you're saying 18 years of...
kids like that are the future in your eyes? Ish.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think I like it because it reminds me of the Prodigy. But
really?
I would think of maybe a 12-year-old kid likes it who's never heard the Prodigy. Oh, it reminds me, do you remember Candy Flip?
Yes, Strawberry Fields.
Yeah, I can remember going, this song's amazing.
Really?
And my mum going, you know, this is a Beatles song. I was like, I was shocked.
Yeah. That's so funny.
I think that's when I first heard it about. I didn't know what covers were until
we could
that.
Devote a whole show to...
the Beatles?
Not to the Beatles, but songs I'd with like fairly blatant drug references, of which that was one. Mm. But listen, chaps, I hate to break up the party, but we've had a lot of fun here, and thank you guys for listening, but we genuinely are going to a nightclub. It's Friday night, and we're about to go to Ministry of Sound. I know this seems surprising, but we need to go get our clubbing on.
Tunda's wearing an all-grey sort of tracksuit. Are you wearing that tonight?
Nah, probably going to get changed. But do people still wear, like, destroy stuff, like tight, this black...
I think you can pull that off.
You reckon?
I mean, I've not been to the Ministry of Sound for about a decade. I have no idea what's going on anymore. Yeah,
it's what kids are wearing nowadays.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next Pipe and Slip Maps, I'm not going to put a date on it, but it'll be soon.
Yeah, 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
It's been real.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Goodbye.